Welcome to We Are Chafees Looking Upstream, a conversational podcast of community, humanness, and well-being rooted in Chafee County, Colorado. I'm Adam Williams. Today, I'm talking with Derek Scott, a professional skateboarder born and raised in Salida, Colorado. This is an easy and fun one, where we talk about skateboarding culture and history and music. We also talk about the failure and perseverance that's a necessary part of skating. We talk about how a kid growing up in Salida with not a lot of skating terrain became a competition skater, traveling and winning his way to a pro career. And how Derek was part of the big team effort to get the new skate park built in Salida a few years ago. Also, why it was important to him to bring a World Cup skateboarding event to the scene with the Heart of the Rockies Rampage. We also give his dad, Michael, some light and love. Michael died from cancer last November. Derek learned some important lessons from his dad, and it's so great to hear about their relationship. Just so much love. As a dad to two sons myself, this really hits home. I just hope that I have such a positive and lasting impact on my boys as Michael did on Derek. It's so cool. All right, now here's a heads up. We jump into this conversation with the wheels already turning in a way that I don't usually do. We're talking about our people-pleasing tendencies. Derek was saying good stuff, and so I hit record early, and then we just kept rolling. It's a little bit of a behind-the-scenes peek for you, because there's always the conversation that is recorded and shared with you, plus the conversations that come before we hit record and after we've stopped recording. And I'm going to admit that I feel honored to be there for all of it, selfishly. Just by the way it works to do this stuff, I get to spend a little extra time with each guest. And that stuff doesn't always get shared. In fact, most of the time it doesn't. But this time, I also get to let you in on more of what happened up front. You get to hear some of the great pre-conversation that can happen with these guests. Maybe you didn't need all that explanation, but I wanted to share it, so I did. The Looking Upstream podcast is supported by Chafee County Public Health and the Chafee Housing Authority. As always, show notes with photos, links, and a transcript of the conversation are published at wearechafeepod.com. All right, now, here we are, here we go, Derek Scott.
I think it like gets me into sticky situations where I promise too much to too many people. I don't know, like people coming in to like skate and stuff like that. I'll be like, yeah, we'll be on this session. And then I'll totally look back at my calendar. I'll be like, oh my God, I'm not even in town like on these days. Or like promising too much, like being a part of like meetings or like committees or stuff like that. Sometimes I'm like, I get a little overwhelmed. Like not necessarily something that I like don't mind doing. But I like also at the same time, I'm like, it's not my favorite thing to do.
So we're talking about people pleasing. And, you know, for me, that's something that I'm like, I've come to decide is not the best thing. Yeah. Right. Because in the end, it's always trying to make somebody else happy. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know what I've encountered a few times lately is that this idea of being worried about people pleasing is somehow a selfish act. Because what we're really trying to do is control how they view us.
Exactly.
So yeah. We're trying to manipulate other people view us in a positive light.
Yeah.
And for me, that kind of stirs up something. It's like, if I'm going to go out of my way just to try to make everybody think that I am perfect.
Right.
But really, it makes me feel like crap.
Right.
Like, where's the positive in it?
Yeah. Well, because in it, you want to stay humble too. And you want to like think that you're staying humble, I guess, in that situation. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it definitely is a selfish act in that sense, trying to make everybody happy. Because yeah, I mean, in actuality, you can't make everybody happy. So,
well, is it about, I guess if people learn to take advantage of it, right?
That becomes problematic. If they start viewing you like that, where they can take advantage of you, I think that's when it becomes an issue. I think I'm starting to find a finer line of being able to like control things in my life and being able to say no in certain situations. And like, it's definitely something that I've realized over the years. And it's something that I like notice now more when it's happening. So I'm able to like take control more of that situation while it's going on. And honestly, like feeling, cause you get that sense of like regret when you're letting someone down or you say no. I've also like kind of started to let that one go because at the same time, like, I mean, at some point people just have to understand, you know, like
I get a sense of regret when I've let myself down.
Yeah.
I think that's where I am at this point. Yeah. Was why did I bend over backwards for these people who I tried to make happy? I tried to accommodate. I tried to say yes. And then I don't know that they cared other than they got what they wanted. And yeah. I feel like crap for maybe letting them kind of walk over me.
I feel you.
Yeah. All right. So
that's a deep combo to get into right away.
It is. But you know, you ought to live inside my head.
Yeah,
man. You ought to be inside all the conversations in my head all the time.
I know.
It's always running like this. Mm-hmm. Look, I'm really glad that we get a chance to sit down and talk right now because you are headed out before long. You're going to spend the winter in California.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an annual thing you do? Is that because it's winter and you're like, I got to keep skating? Like,
it's actually kind of a newer thing. Like, I lived out when I first graduated high school. I lived out in California for like a couple years in total. I'd be like coming back every now and again for like holidays and all that kind of stuff. And then, I've been back in Colorado and Salida like for the past like 6 years, I would say, for the like six summers and winters and all that. And I just have a lot of friends out there now, and I'm like having too much fun skating. And like, I love Colorado so much. Like, summertime in Colorado is the most gorgeous place on earth, and I love snowboarding and doing all that. But yeah, now it's at a point where I got to kind of buckle down a little bit and really focus up and head out there. And I just want to skate. Like, I feel like I don't skate for so long in the wintertime. I get this like seasonal depression, and everybody says seasonal depression, but skateboarding is like seriously who I am. And so when I can't do that and I can't express myself in that way, it like really, really like bears a big weight on me, I feel like.
It feels like to me as a non-skater, an easy corollary between skateboarding and snowboarding.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like, is it, because I see guys out on the slope, like I snowboard.
Yeah.
But I can't do all the things. Like I picked it up. I started when I was 40.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do, well, anything, any tricks. Like, I'm lucky if I can ollie, I can do
there's a huge mental factor. I think the mentality of like all of it is kind of the main thing. Like, everybody, and a lot of these times you're thinking of like, what happens if I fall? You know? Yeah.
Well, that's something I think about more now than it would have been 25
right,
years ago.
Right, exactly. And now, like, but that's not how you like progress in that kind of stuff. You have to think of like, what, this is what it's going to be like when I make it. Like, think about, like, I was joke around, I would say, the glory, do it for the glory. And yeah, I think, I don't know, there's definitely a big correlation with snowboarding and skateboarding now. I started snowboarding before skateboarding, and skateboarding just kind of took hold for me. That was like my favorite thing to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where do you go in California?
I go to like northern San Diego County. So when I lived out there the first time, I lived in Oceanside, California. And then I'll be in like the Encinitas, Vista, Carlsbad area.
I've been to Carlsbad.
Yeah. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Love it over amazing. There. It reminds me of like a lot of, I don't know, because I'm a small town kid. I love the simplicity of small towns and stuff. Like, I can do cities only for like a week, you know, when I'm traveling and stuff. But
well, you grew up in Salida, right?
Yeah, born and raised in Salida. And yeah, that's why I like that small town thing. A lot of, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people when they are born and raised in a small town like this, it's always about like wanting to get out and doing all that, and which is, yeah, you should for sure. But like, also appreciate, if you come from a gorgeous place like this, I think like the appreciation of it goes a long way, because I mean, we live in a destination like paradise for people, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like, you don't want to take it for granted because, well, you know, we obviously have tons of tourists and things here.
Mm-hmm.
I am not from here. And I think a lot of times people are like, well, now that we've made it, close the gates. You know, I don't want all these other people crowding our town. But how we take it in our house is, man, we wanted to be here.
Yeah.
Of course, other people want to see the place.
Yeah.
And the way I see it is that we are extremely fortunate to be here.
Oh,
whereas
absolutely.
A lot of other people that come visit on vacation, it might be once in a lifetime. It might be once a year, whatever their deal is. But they're wishing they could live here, probably mm-hmm. on some level.
Oh, yeah.
So I think to be young, like, I grew up in a rural town too, but it wasn't here. Mm-hmm. It was in northern Missouri.
Yeah.
Flat, rural, nothing yeah. special compared to where we are with this mountain paradise and the yeah. river and all the things. So I get the idea of wanting to leave that small town, but I appreciate that you're like, yeah, and I don't want to forget this small town. Yeah. I don't want to lose appreciation or take it for granted.
It's changed a lot since I was a kid too. Like we have so much in town now from when I was a kid. When I was a kid, it was just the downtown skate park, and then we would go jump in the river, like do the cliffs. And that was honestly enough, you know, like when we were kids. I couldn't imagine growing up in a more special place. Now, I mean, we have our brand new skate park. We have the river wave, which is a new hobby I started getting into, is like the river surfing and stuff like that, which is brings people from everywhere. There's a lot of new things that are in town that just make it even better for kids growing up. Like I couldn't imagine if I had the stuff growing up now that I would have had back then.
I bought a board for river surfing, one of the inflatable ones, like one of the basic let's start here things that I picked up from one of the river outfitters, one of their rentals at the end of the season last year. I'm like, okay, finally, this is going to force me. I have no excuse. I have a board. I need to get out there. And then this summer, you know, we had the high water and stuff. So I found an excuse.
Like, it was hectic.
Like
too.
Even when it came down, I never made it into the river. Like I just don't have experience with that. And I so much, like there's part of me that so badly wants to be that guy who's having fun. And then there's like the middle-aged dad part of me that's like, you know, it's so easy to stay at home and say, oh, well, no, you know, the family wants to do this instead.
Then they got to start getting into the river surfing too.
You know, my wife took a lesson once. She tried, and honestly—
through Badfish or?
No, I don't remember who it was.
Okay.
I think she really had a hard time, like— feeling safe in the current.
Yeah.
I think really messed with her.
It's fast. It comes at you fast.
Like, and that was not the big wave.
Yeah. Oh, that was the, okay. That was
That's like what the office wave is.
Yeah. The office wave further north. Is the higher one.
To even go down and stand at the side of that scout wave is unbelievable.
It's so cool. I love it.
I like watching it. It looks scary just to me even standing on the side.
Seriously. Big shout out to Mike and Zach from Badfish, because they're the ones that got me into it. I mean, they're skateboarders too, so we would always run into each other at this skate park and stuff, and I really wanted to get into it, and they're the ones that encouraged me to start getting into it. They're like, you'd be so good, you'd love it, dude. And I sucked when I first started it. Oh my gosh, I could not figure it out. And there's a lot of stuff on it that I still haven't figured out, but once you like start to get in the wave, oh, it's such a fun feeling. And you were right, when it was high water this year, whoo, that was crazy for me. That would get the heart pumping for sure.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Have you been up, I guess, up from the San Diego area? Have you been up to Venice Beach?
Yeah
and skated there?
Yeah, for sure.
Several years ago, this was pre-pandemic, on a family road trip, we were out there, and I don't think I've ever seen better skating in my life. Like I've watched pros at some event in Breckenridge and stuff, probably, you know, people, I don't know, maybe you were even there, but maybe. It's like on that level, I'm looking at pros. I'm like, well, yeah, they're doing cool stuff. Cause they're pros, right? Like I give benefit of the doubt. They're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to Venice Beach and the skate park that's there. And there were people from like young kids to 70 plus year old women up there, just rocking it. Everything was so fast, so smooth, so cool. And as soon as one person was out, somebody else was dropping in.
Yeah.
That was, from a spectator perspective, such an amazing experience to me. Like I was so impressed.
And there's always spectators around that park too. Like there's constantly people up against that railing watching. So it's like,
that was us.
To go skate there, you kind of have to like be ready to like go, just be ready for people to watch you.
You know?
Like that's the main thing. There's a lot of good skaters that come out of Venice.
It's kind of a big stage in that way.
Yeah.
Like, this is recreational, but
yeah, I mean,
it's like you got to be ready for the big time in a way.
That's where it all came from, was from Venice and in that
right,
area.
Yeah.
So.
Can you imagine if Z-Boys and that crew, you know, like Stacy Peralta and Tony Alva and all those guys, if they'd have had something like that instead? I mean, they're the ones who really made those things become a vision.
I don't think they would know what to do with it at that moment. I think it like progressed in just the right way. Like, cause then they came out, you know, it was clay wheels, and then they came out with urethane, and they were just starting to figure out how to come up walls, and they progressed super fast. So yeah, maybe if they had perfect transition, perfect walls, some crazy stuff might have went down, but it's even more brute that they were doing it in pools.
Right. I mean, the skate parks exist because of what they did.
Yeah, exactly.
And going into pools and sneaking into people's backyards, you know, and the fact that it was, it's funny how things can come together. There was, what, a drought or some sort of shortage. People were not allowed to fill their pools. And then these guys would sneak in and do this stuff. That was also back.
There's guys still doing that. Steve Alba, he has a pool cleaning service, and he goes around the LA area, like Anaheim, that area, and he lets people know, like, he'll empty their pools and clean them if he gets to, like, skate them and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So he's got a crazy, crazy way
That's
of
funny.
Getting into pools still.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. You know, this is almost embarrassing. It's so ridiculous. But when I was a kid, so I'm growing up in the 80s, and I had no influence for skating. For some reason, though, I wanted a skateboard. And I'm going to guess.
That's awesome.
I'm going to guess I saw a movie, and I'm thinking it's probably Christian Slater in Gleaming the Cube. Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen it probably since I was a kid. That probably is why I'm like, okay, I want that. I want a skateboard. But there was nobody. I knew no skaters. Mm-hmm. Of course, we had no skate park. And here's the part that's kind of embarrassing. It was so short-lived before I gave up, because every rock I hit, I would go flying. And I hit every damn rock out there because I didn't even know
they were coming out for you.
I didn't know how to loosen the trucks. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that that was what I needed to do to allow me to move the deck and make movement possible. So I gave up.
So you just couldn't turn, so you're just running into stuff?
Yeah. I'm trying to I'm trying to hop over. I mean, fail.
Yeah, yeah.
It was nothing but failure and misery.
Well, that's what skating is, though. Like, I mean, in actuality, like, it's all failure, and you just live for those, like, little moments where you do make the trick. I mean, I can't – every skate session I ever have, it's, like, 85% of me just jumping off my board, knee sliding, or just running out of stuff, you know. There's only so much success that comes from skating, and that's what makes it so rare, and, like, the perseverance of skateboarding, and why that makes it, like, so cool is because of the fight. Like, it's – I don't know. There's a part where, like, you can't physically stop, you know, until you physically can't go anymore. That's where that kind of comes into play.
I really appreciate that aspect of it. In my case, I was just trying to do a straight line on flat ground, man. I'm not trying to get up and ride rails and all of that, right? But I didn't have YouTube or anything to go to, and I had no friends or nobody, no community around a skate. Like, it was just a different time, and I happened to be in a place where that just wasn't.
Do you remember what your first skateboard was?
The only skateboard I ever, now my sons have some, but no, I have no idea. It was white with some sort of something painted on the bottom.
See, you know a little bit about it. That's good.
I mean, I can picture it mostly, but it's unfortunate. I think I feel like in hindsight, I wish that I would have had more of an experience with it, because over the years, and maybe especially in my 40s now, you know, I have conversations with people, whether it's on this podcast or in general, guys my age who grew up skating, and it was such a key piece of their lives, even if it was totally recreational, which of course is for most people.
Right.
And I feel like there was kind of a, I don't know, it's a misconnection between me and those guys, because it's now part of so much of our culture and population. Whereas if you'd have gone 30, 40, 50 years ago, you were really an outlier.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's changed, like, immensely. That's the cool part of being a part of skating for as long as I have, is I've got to see it, like, change a little bit, you know, throughout the years. Like, now everybody wants to be a skateboarder, and that's pretty rad, you know. We had a, like, small little crew growing up in Salida and stuff like that, but then everybody kind of got into their own things, and team sports was always the main thing in this area. So
sure.
It's cool to see everybody wanting to be a part of it now, especially with the new skate park that we have. I mean, it's insane to see how many people that, like, I didn't know skated, or people that I haven't seen pick up a skateboard in, like, a really, really long time, all, like, coming back into it and, like, really enjoying it. That's been a really fun experience for me.
When we talk about the history with skateboarding, you know, we mentioned the Z-Boys and those guys kind of, you know, sneaking into yards and doing these things. Mm-hmm. There was a real counterculture kind of piece to this, a rebellious, anarchic almost kind of vibe. Where does it now? Like, you're saying that it's way more popular. Does it almost feel like it's sterilized in a way because it's so mainstream accepted? Or do you feel like there still is that vibe of we're something different?
No, because there's contest skateboarders, and then there's, like, skateboarders that are, like, filming video parts and the ones that are just out on the streets. So, I mean, it's not possible to kill skateboard culture. I just don't think that that's ever going to be a thing. You know, I think it's cool that it's getting its recognition now that it's in the Olympics and it has all that, but skateboarding is also like still super raw. And that's why like it can still be appreciated. Like, I don't think that could be depleted. There's, like I said, there's two different kinds of skateboarding now. So that's cool.
I think about the music, again, that rebellious mm-hmm. piece of things and, you know, how so much. So I've thought about just from over time, like as a, again, non-skater, but a casual observer, you know, watching documentaries or whatever, and it's on like punk rock, you've got skateboarding, hip hop, graffiti writing, all these sort of rebellious expressions of self that came up in the 70s pretty much as their roots. And I think about how, you know, there's just, because I've interviewed over the years, whether that was for magazines or podcasts or whatever, mm-hmm. various artists in particular and musicians in particular, and they're like skateboarding and punk. Those were the two mainstays yeah. of my life growing up. And even as guys my age, that still is like at the heart of who they are.
Yeah.
Do you vibe with that? Is that like, is punk rock or any of that sort of thing your thing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really a super grunge like punk rocker. I love it while I'm skating, and I'm definitely like a part of that culture. But I feel like skating is a totally different kind of culture now. Like there's sessions where you're playing rap. There's sessions where they're like playing like crazy like techno, like stuff like that. And that's like mainly at contests because they're
hyping the
trying
crowd.
Trying to feed the public and stuff like that. If I'm like at a backyard pool or something, I mean, yeah, punk is always what we're playing and stuff like that. So it's fun to adopt like different characters in that aspect, you know? Like I don't want to be just like this guy, that guy, that guy. Like I want to be like all of them, if that makes sense.
It does. You know, I'm just remembering, I read an interview you gave with Juice Magazine.
Uh-huh.
And this was several years ago, probably most of a decade ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
And they asked you, what music have you been listening to?
I don't even know what I said.
I was going to ask, do you remember what you said? Uh-uh. I'm gonna tell you.
Is it crazy?
It is based on how
I listen to all kinds of music.
It is on how I framed it as uh-huh. punk rock, hard, you know, we're rebellious, yeah. we've got attitude.
Yeah.
Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone.
Oh my God.
and look, I get it. That was from my childhood. We've got Tom Cruise, Top Gun, The Danger Zone. But
I don't even know.
Again,
I don't even think I was being serious.
Well, that was, I wonder, was that a joke? Are you going soft on that or whatever? But
I do listen to that song a lot, though.
But. Well, so you weren't joking, man. No. But that's cool. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you.
No, I wouldn't even hide it. I love it.
So
I love Top Gun.
I love the overlap of music as self-expression alongside something like skating.
Yeah.
And you use the word, like the way you express yourself, you go into a seasonal sort of, you know, depression if you mm-hmm. are away from skating for a long time. How do you view the expression piece of yourself through skating?
Oh, that's a good question. Because I was going to say that I don't know, just like there's different kinds of music, like there's different styles of skateboarding that go with that kind of music. Say you're like filming for a video part and something like that, like somebody's skating, you can't put like three or four or five skaters and they're all skating to like the same song the same way. You know, everybody has a different leg movement. Everybody looks kind of different. So just like music and the beats, the skaters are also like in a different kind of beat of their own. So they skate differently. It's really hard to explain from the eyes of a skateboarder. How I would express myself through skating, I don't know. I like in a music sense,
Well, no, just how you feel it, I think. Because you had used, you know, I think that word of how you express your expression, whatever, and that you miss that when it's wintertime.
Yeah.
How do you feel it? How do you feel yourself connecting with that or flowing with that experience? Skateboarding is kind of a medium of expression, like being a painter or a musician or whatever.
On it, oh man, there's like waves. There's like a lot of waves of skateboarding. You know, there's like times where there's been so many times going throughout my career, where I'm feeling like super down on my skateboarding and stuff like that. And that's always hard to go through. And I think a lot of athletes go through that themselves, where you're always comparing yourself to other people doing all that. As the years have gone by, I've kind of accepted what skateboarding is to me and my role in skateboarding and stuff like that. And honestly, I love it. I'm not like, I grew up a contest skateboarder as a kid and like would go to every single contest, won a bunch of contests and all that. And I'm still a contest skateboarder, but I'm not really going to these contests to like, oh, I gotta win, like that kind of stuff. It's more of just like, I'm there for the culture. I'm there for the vibe. I'm there to make the crowd happy, do all that kind of stuff and skate with my friends. Cause that's basically, I mean, it's what it's all about right now. So I find myself like flowing through it easier and expressing it in like my own personal way of skating. You know, like I'm done trying to compare myself to other people. Like I want to skate the way that I want to skate.
How do you become a professional in this? Because it's not like those ball sports that are the main sports on TV,
right?
Like basketball, football, and all that.
Yeah.
And this path is different. As we've talked about, there's a history here. This took evolution to get here. So I don't know what the state of it is now and how you make a living at this and how you crack your way in. Because as far as I know, there's not somewhere you can file a job application.
You know? That would be nice if you could do that. No, how I did it, like I said, contest was my avenue. Growing up in Salida, like it's not like we had a bunch of like street spots and the skate scene wasn't huge here, you know? So there wasn't a way of just like getting noticed just from skating. You had to travel around and you had to do all that kind of stuff. So that was a big part of what I was doing, was traveling to contests with my dad and my brothers and my mom and doing that whole thing. So how I got into it was Rocky Mountain Rampage, which was a World Cup contest in Colorado Springs. And basically that was like a qualifier to be invited onto the pro tour. And so that's how I got into it. And I guess that's how I was classified as a professional skateboarder then, is when you're competing and making money and doing all that. And then there's other avenues of skateboarders that don't do contests, you know, and they're getting brand deals for like skateboards, shoes, energy drinks, that kind of stuff. So there's so many different avenues.
Is that through like those people who they go out and make videos doing things that are just amazing, I mean, and entertaining?
That's core skateboarding right there, is those guys that are just hitting the streets and doing what skateboarding is like really all about, you know,
getting people like Red Bull, you know, to, you know, maybe be a broadcast streaming place, but also support.
Yeah.
Besides all the other brands.
And honestly, like skating, like the best way to get known in skating is events, you know, because it's hard for the general public to even like know who a skateboarder is. Like that's super rare. Unless you're like on the higher end of things, like if you're like Tony Hawk or Ryan Sheckler.
If you ask people on the average person on the street who's one skateboarder, you know, Tony Hawk, I'd have to think probably almost 100% of the time.
I heard a one joke. I was like, I think it was Family Guy that I saw it on. He's like, please welcome to the stage the only famous skateboarder to ever live, Tony Hawk. I was like, oh my God, that's kind of true. But no, it's, there's different ways to get into it. And like, I qualified to be invited to pro contests when I was like 15.
Okay.
And then, so that's kind of how my avenue got into it. And then that's when sponsors started to roll in and it got a few pro models, stuff like that. And
I assume since you were competing, that was on some level a dream, a goal, something you wanted to have happen.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, being able to like compete at the events that I like grew up watching was some of the most insane things. And like skating against like my idols growing up was, I mean, I was dumbfounded the first time I met a couple of the dudes, like Bucky Lassick. Like he's my all time favorite skateboarder. And to be competing with him, like in Vans pool parties, stuff like that, it was incredible. I still remember the first day I met him, and it was just the funniest situation. I literally had a sandwich in my hand and I just like dropped it. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's him. Same thing with like doing like the first demo with like Tony Hawk and like stuff like that, and being around him. And I don't know, there's a lot of amazing skateboarders out there that I grew up watching that are now like friends, which is honestly super surreal. So that's super cool.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And they're probably fairly open to that, right? I mean, they know that they are not only stars in mainstream and across so many, but they're stars to those who are younger coming behind.
Well, that's what it was. But at the, like, there were skateboarders, you know, like skateboarders got skateboarders' backs at the end of the day. Like there's probably a fine line. Like there's some like guys I met when I was first coming into the scene that like probably didn't mess with me like that much. Like I'm just the new kid coming up. Probably I wasn't even that good. And they're like, yeah, whatever. This kid isn't going to last long. But then as the years go by, we start to reconnect and do all that. And No, yeah, it's pretty special. Like, all the friends I made from skateboarding are insane. My best friends in the world, you know, have come from just traveling to contests, and we see each other multiple times a year, and it's so cool in that aspect.
This got to be so awesome that those competitions or whatever events you're doing are reasons, like, they are bringing you together.
Yeah.
And you just are popping up in different cities, even different countries, and you're just, oh yeah, there's this familiarity, and there's my buddy, and I haven't seen him for a few months or a year or whatever it is. Just such a cool aspect.
Oh yeah, it's like, it's just reunions every, yeah. It's like all summer long or all year long. It's a reunion every like month or two, you know, you get to reunite with the boys, reunite with all your friends, and it's just time to go skate. It's
awesome. That's so fun.
Yeah, I love it.
You mentioned your family. If we can talk about your dad,
mm-hmm.
I know that you lost him last year.
I did.
And yep. I'm sorry about that. I know that you were very close,
mm-hmm.
and he was big in your skating.
Yeah.
Tell me about him. Tell me about that connection.
I mean, my dad was the man. I mean, Michael Scott, he was a big part of the community too. Like, he did, I mean, he's been in this community forever, did a lot of construction work in the community, and him like supporting my skateboarding was like, I don't know, it was a lot. If it was like everything, and like after he died, I had a hard time skating for a little bit just because he was like so much a part of it, you know. But every event, get a call from him, talk to me about how it's going, all that kind of stuff. And like I said, I grew up with, it was me, my brothers, and my dad for the most part, and my mom, just driving all over Colorado together, piling up in the van, like every single weekend we're going to contests together. And my dad would be there to like catch me in the bowl while I was like trying tricks. Like, he would like put himself at the bottom to like catch me if I was going down, that kind of stuff. And that's just the kind of guy he was. And he believed in me. Like, he kind of knew I had something going on pretty early on, and he was pretty involved with it, which was, I mean, huge. I don't know where I'd be without him, you know?
Was he a skater too?
A little bit when he was younger. He actually, my dad learned how to skate when he was like 40.
Okay.
When I was skating.
Perfect age.
Oh my gosh. It was so funny. And this is just a testament to who he was too. I was trying a trick, and he was like trying to give me some advice and on like what I should be doing, stuff like that. And I just looked on, I was like, you don't know how, like, you have no idea what you're talking about. And he was like, all right, fine. And then he took that and he actually learned how to skate. He could drop in on everything. And the old bowl, he was doing like big backside Smith grinds, and like, oh, it was awesome. He was getting hurt a lot, but he loved it. And he was like, I can do it too. So
I got a lot of respect for that.
It was super cool.
My boys have taken more to scooters more than the skateboards,
mm-hmm.
but I've been at the skate park with them sometimes. And even just on a scooter, I don't even know if I've done it on skateboard, to drop in or do something. I'm like, okay. So like just that tiny bit of experience of what they're trying to accomplish. And there's respect.
Yeah. And he was dedicated too. Like, he would go to the skate park at like 7 a.m. While like at right after or right before he would take us to school, he was going out there in his construction boots before work, skating in the morning to like work on tricks and stuff. And oh my gosh, it was so cool. And he was a huge part of the skate community and just Salida in general. Like, all the kids my dad would bring snacks and food for and stuff like that. And I don't know, we took a lot of the kids that were growing up with me to contests all around Colorado, Shea Donovan, and it was awesome. He did a lot for us, so. And it definitely helped out a lot after when I was in my adult years of my career too. You know, he wasn't there like physically for a lot of the contests after he got sick and all that, but definitely was there to connect with me before, after all that.
When he got sick, was this cancer?
Yeah. So I was a senior in high school. And my parents ended up splitting up, and then my dad lived up in Denver, and my mom ended up going up north too. So I spent my senior year living on my own in Salida, which is kind of crazy. That's a whole nother story. But he got sick when I was a senior in high school, and it was leukemia. And so he went through a whole stem cell transplant, all of his chemo, radiation. Was in remission for basically the whole time after that, which is pretty incredible considering like everything he went through. But then the sickness that comes after chemo and radiation, that's kind of it's never done, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It was, if you were a senior in high school then, I mean, it was several years at least.
Yeah. So he had it for 5 years and then was in remission for, he had it for 4 years, was in remission for five. And then another cancer came back, but it wasn't leukemia. It was a cancer from other radiation that he got, which is another thing. And then, yeah.
You've described him as inspirational,
mm-hmm.
not only to you, but to others,
mm-hmm.
as your hero.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like he was a guy that was full of love.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there's probably a lot of that kind of stuff he passed on to you. Are there kind of non-skating oriented memories or lessons that you really carry forward from him?
Yeah. I mean, they're like, I think like the talks that me and him would have like alone, like we've taken a couple of skate trips together, just me and him, and kind of the talks like alone at the hotel or like waiting at the airport or something like that. Like those are stuff that's really stuck with me. My dad was not born with really anything. He grew up in Chicago, and he would talk about like sleeping in the snowbanks of Chicago, and just the way he grew up was not ideal. But he always said to me, like, never give up, never surrender, that kind of stuff. Like, it's not an option. And that's maybe that's why skateboarding like matters so much to me too, is the perseverance. Because, and that's one of the biggest pieces of character that I think are the most important, are perseverance. And that's because of what he showed through everything. Even in the later, like, he was never dealt good hand, you know? I mean, even with the being sick at the end of his life, like, and he just kept going and going and going. And mainly, and all of that was for the love of his kids. And he loved us, like, we were everything to him.
I think it's incredible when people go through such tough experiences, period. But, I mean, from your upbringing all the way up, and and there still is a softness to him. Like, he was still full of love.
Oh, yeah.
He showed that to you.
He was definitely a hard ass, like, earlier, but like he was such a teddy bear for sure. The compassion he would show just to like the general public, just people in general. I mean, I can't even put into like a number on how many people he was helping. Either people he would come stay at his house, or just to get out of the cold weather, stuff like that. It's indescribable, you know.
You mentioned the perseverance. Are there other, say, attributes that you feel like live on in you, like things that you know, like, man, I'm a guy who's full of love or whatever because mm-hmm. of my dad, or I'm, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
What do you see in yourself?
You know, I got like, I think there's a lot. I think like the perseverance, I think the amount of like love that I have to give, like in certain situations, like is a lot. Like I'm a super ride or die kind of a person.
Loyalty
is like huge for me. And then just family, being super family oriented. I think that's a huge part of me that I never want to let go of, because family's super important to me. I mean, I've dealt with so much loss over my years, and like more than I would never wish that on anybody, you know, to feel that kind of stuff. And my dad was right there with me through all of that, going through all of those losses together. So I think like,
sounds like he was a generous man.
For sure. I mean, probably more generous than he should have been in a lot of aspects. He definitely was like, he's a people pleaser too. Maybe that definitely got that from him too.
Is he a trusting guy? Are you a trusting guy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could like, at any time you could call him and he would be there to help you. I mean, I can't remember a single time where I called and he didn't answer and wasn't like there to like drop everything and help me or my brothers or my sisters or any of that, or just like family, friends or any of that. He would always just like in the snap of a finger, he would drop everything to come help you if you needed it.
Did you ever get in trouble? Not just like with him, like
cannot disclose
trouble where you had to call him and be like, Dad, I got a good one here, but I need you.
Living on my own in high school, I definitely got into some stuff, and he was super understanding. I think he was more like understanding, and that's where he helped out in a lot of aspects. But he definitely covered me on a lot of different things, covered me from Or there was some stuff where he was like, all right, don't tell your mother. Like that kind of stuff.
I think it's funny, that kind of dynamic, and not that it's always gender-based, but I've had these conversations with friends, you know, guy friends who are also parents of sons like I am, and our thing is, you want to come to us first.
Yeah.
Like I can't, I'm not going to be hypocritical
yeah.
and just get on you
yeah.
for things that the odds are I've covered the range
yeah.
and my sons aren't going to do worse, so yeah. it's like, let's come to me and I'll help you ease this in with your
mom.
That's
how he was. Cause I mean, he had some mileage. He'd been around the block a few times, you know, he'd had some experiences. So I think he just like was able to be like, yeah, I've been there, done that kind of a thing.
From the standpoint of being the kid, like you, let's say maybe you're feeling unsure. Oh, mm-hmm. am I in trouble? Maybe you're ashamed. Maybe you're defiant. Cause you're ready for him to yell at you, whatever mm-hmm. it is. And then you hear your dad say, I've been there, kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And me and my dad butted heads too when we were growing up because we're super alike, super, super alike. So we would get into fights every once in a while and it would get steaming. We wouldn't agree on everything, but like there was always coming back to each other and being there for each other. That was always a huge understanding for us both. And like I said, the love was immense.
Could you agree on Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone?
He probably didn't like it as much as I did. We could both agree though that Styx is the greatest rock band of all time. You can't say otherwise.
No one can
disagree with me.
It's subjective. Let's talk about the skate park. Because you mentioned there was a new one. It's a few years old now, right?
Yeah.
Like 2 or 3 years old?
I think we're going on 4.
Okay.
Yeah, because we've done Rampage 3 years. And it was open for almost a year.
Were you were somehow involved in, I don't even know, was it design? Was it fundraising? What was going on?
It was all of it. So
okay.
The story behind Slide Skate Park, the new one, it all started when I came back to town. And I just really, I don't know, I wanted to do something. I was in a place where I just wanted some motivation to get something going here. And the dream of a new skate park, like in our hometown, was always a thing that we wanted to do, you know? And now I had some kind of backing and skating was going good. So I ended up just posting on, it was like one of the group chats in town. And I just asked everybody, I was like, thoughts on a new skate park in Salida. And it absolutely just went crazy online on Facebook. And there was so like over 1,000 people that responded to it, that kind of thing. So then we took into initiative that we're like, okay, maybe this could be a real thing, you know? And, yeah, we just started the initiative to, get it going. And we started Friends of Slide Skate Park. So in this committee, it was, consisted of me, Amy Reed, Laura Donovan, Bill Donovan, Diesel Post, Drew Nelson, and yeah. And then a bunch of other community members that really kicked in. But we created, and Rod Roderick, he was another big part of it. But we kicked off Friends of Slide Skate Parks, and it all started with us just doing grassroots fundraising for the skate park. We didn't really have an idea of, I had no idea what we were getting ourselves into, you know? And we went to the city council meeting just to kind of ask them, like the first one, like, this is our idea. And we had so many people show up to the city council meeting that wanted to talk about it. And they gave us, you know, do the whole thing, get your signatures, start raising money, doing all this kind of stuff and filing for grants and applications. And that's where Amy Reed and Laura Donovan really came into play as they kind of handled all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was just like staying like really heavy and almost annoying with it, because with these city projects, like they can really get lost if you don't like stay gung-ho on it. And all of us were really committed to making this happen. So for 3 years, we ended up fundraising for the skate park. Me and a couple others, me, Ryder Reed, Shay Donovan, we all had a big help in designing the skate park with Grindline Skate Parks. And yeah, I mean, we spent 3 years grassroots fundraising, got a couple grants, the GoCo grant, which was honestly the biggest one. So we applied for that one, which was a $350,000 grant. And then when we ended up getting that, we approached the city again and said, hey, if we get this, would you guys match us? And we ended up getting that approved too. So once we got the GoCo grant, it was smooth sailing from there. And it took us 3 years to start construction on the skate park, which is kind of crazy.
From when you first
when we first started to when we finished, it was 3 years.
What does it feel like to accomplish that and to be, you're a hometown kid, you grew up skating here, you're now a professional who's out there making these connections with all these big names like mm-hmm. Tony Hawk and everything, and yet you're back here for the community that you came from, and you're a leading voice in that effort. Got to feel good, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, this community is everything to me. You know, I've said it in, like, everything that I've done. This community means a lot to me. If it wasn't for this place, I don't know. You can't really say where you would have been, but, like, the community support I've gotten through here and just how many good memories I have here means a lot to me. And the fact that I get the community support now after traveling and still traveling and being, when I come back home, just getting the love that I do, like, that's something that's super, super special to me. And yeah, this community is really awesome.
And then there's Heart of the Rockies Rampage
yep.
competition, which yep. you also are involved in.
Yeah. So going back into it. So after the skate park got finished, we had the grand opening. All that was super awesome. Did a few Channel 9 pieces that ended up being on it. We actually gave the governor, Jared Polis, we gave him a tour of the skate park, which is super awesome. So I got to meet him and have a lunch with him about the skate park and what we did and all that, which is super, super cool just to show the governor like the new skate park in Salida. So that was awesome.
Did he try to skate?
No. Okay. He held the skateboard though. So there you go. That's part of it. And then, yeah, there was after the skate park was done, like that was the whole reason. Well, there's multiple reasons on why we wanted the skate park, but one of the big reasons was to bring World Cup skateboarding to Salida, because how I got into skating was Rocky Mountain Rampage, World Cup in Colorado Springs, you know, and I wanted to bring that feeling back to Salida because like I said, it's two different worlds that I was living in, you know, like there's Salida and then there's like the skateboarding world, and nobody from Salida or like my friends really knew what I was going out to do when I was doing these. And then also on the same side, like my skating friends and everybody that I was traveling to go see, they didn't know where I came from. And I like really wanted to collide those two worlds because this is my favorite place on earth and skateboarding is my favorite, and skateboard contests are like my favorite thing on earth. So I really wanted to bring those two aspects together. And yeah, after the first year of the skate park being open, we ended up hosting World Cup skateboarding, and we just wrapped up our third year this year.
What do you have for goals or dreams for it going forward? Is there anything more, anything bigger, or is just to keep going?
There's always something bigger. There's always like with the events that like I've been a part of in the last couple of years, they're always looking for new venues and new avenues and new ideas and stuff like that. So that's stuff that I like really like to be a part of. Anything I can bring skateboarding wise to Salida, I'm going to try my hardest. So, I mean, we're going to keep building Heart of the Rockies Rampage bigger and bigger and bigger every year. You know, the first year we did it, it was during FIBARC, and that's because we didn't even know if it was going to be a success. And Heart of the Rockies Rampage ended up being such a big event that we had to move it away from FIBARC. So it's only going to get better. Yeah.
That's amazing. Skateboarding has been a part of your life for so long and in such a big way.
17 years.
I mean, that's what, I don't know, 2/3 or something of your life?
Yeah.
So can you imagine a life without skateboarding?
Not a chance. No way. I try to think about it. I don't even know what I would be doing. Maybe a ranch boy or like construction worker or something like that. I have no idea.
This is one of those sports that you can continue on till, I guess, a very ripe age out there, right? Like, even if it's not competitively, you're going to have so many years of muscle memory yeah. and all the skills built in and knowledge that you could skate more or less the rest of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I like growing up, there was always like an ending point for a professional skateboard career. And usually like I thought it was going to be like, you know, like mid-30s, something like that would be it. But now it's until you want to be done. You know, you can stay in the skateboarding world, in the skateboarding industry, as long as you like. And honestly, if you're a real skateboarder, it's hard to get out. of it. You're just always going to be thinking about it and always missing it and doing that. So I'm a skateboarder through and through, and yeah, it's everything.
From what you'd said before about, you know, again, if you go a whole winter without skating,
yeah,
you're feeling it. So yeah, there's also a mental health aspect of this,
for sure,
this activity for
you.
For
sure. And I mean, like snowboarding is amazing. Snowboarding is one of my favorite things, you know. But yeah, just being on a board itself, it's like, it helps, you know. But there's just something about skating that just does it more for me than anything else does. The battle, the struggle, the passion, the glee when you like make something, and the I don't know, there's just so many aspects of it.
This has been great talking with you. A lot
yeah.
of fun.
Yeah, man.
Thanks, Derek.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. I appreciate it, Adam.
Thanks for listening to We Are Chafee's Looking Upstream podcast. I hope that our conversation here today sparked curiosity for you. And if so, you can learn more in this episode's show notes at wearechafeepod.com. If you have comments or know someone in Chafee County, Colorado who I should consider talking with on the podcast, you can email me at adam@wearechafeepod.com. I also invite you to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever platform you use that has that functionality. I also welcome your telling others about the Looking Upstream podcast. Help us to keep growing community and connection through conversation. Once again, I'm Adam Williams, host, producer, and photographer. John Prey is engineer and producer. Thank you to KHEN 106.9 FM, our community radio partner in Salida, Colorado. And to Andrea Carlstrom, director of Chafee County Public Health and Environment, and to Lisa Martin, community advocacy coordinator for the We Are Chafee Storytelling Initiative. The Looking Upstream podcast is a collaboration with the Chafee County Department of Public Health and the Chafee Housing Authority, and is supported by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment's Office of Health Equity. You can learn more about the Looking Upstream podcast at wearechafeepod.com and on Instagram at wearechafeepod. You also can learn more about the overall We Are Chafee Storytelling Initiative at wearechafee.org. Till the next episode, as we say at We Are Chafee, share stories, make change.